episode of the Side Guys Football Forum. I'm one of your co-hosts, Armor the Side, joined as always by my good buddy, my good friend, the other half of the Side Guys, my good friend, Tad the Side. What's happening, Tad? And happy Halloween. It's Halloween week.
Happy Halloween, buddy. happy spooky season. It's a little different. I'm not expecting as many trick-or-treaters, unfortunately, this year. But you know what? It's even COVID can't stop Halloween. It's still going to happen.
Well, if one thing, 2020 has been scary for so many people.
Yeah, hell
so,
yeah.
So you could say it's one of the scariest Halloweens we've had in a long time. So really quick, before we get into today's topics, just what's been your best Halloween costume you've ever dressed up as?
I actually have a great answer for this.
Okay.
So my high school, I went to private high school, so they were very strict about costumes and everything,
okay,
right? But they kind of, there's a tradition where they only let the high school seniors dress up. So that's the big thing. When you're a high school senior, you get to dress up.
Interesting. Okay.
So me and three of my best friends in high school, we asked my parents to take their cars out of our garage. We laid down some plastic tarps. We're not planning a murder, I promise. And what we did is we stacked a bunch of boxes, like cardboard boxes, spray painted them, and then used black duct tape as lines. And together, we made up the entire Tetris block.
Nice.
So it was a great costume. I drew the short straw, which ironically meant I was the longest piece. So I was the total vertical piece.
The up and down piece.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So every time I had to go through a doorway the next day, I literally had to like duck down and like lean my head forward. And it was the biggest pain in the ass that I did not anticipate. But that was easily the best costume. Because nowadays, I'm the douchebag that shows up to the Halloween party in like a basketball jersey being like, oh, I'm Chris Bosh. Like, that's where I'm at
Chris
now.
Bosh.
So that was easily – I will go to bat for Chris Bosh. That's – I will go on a rant there later. But, the Tetris blocks is easiest, the most effort I ever put into a Halloween costume.
Solid. Solid. For me, really fast, a couple of years ago at my work, we did a whole theme as the marketing department. We did Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Not
Free Violet?
Not the crappy Johnny Depp version,
no,
the original
good.
From the
I'm
70s
glad. I'm very glad.
With Gene Wilder. Yours truly was Willy Wonka. We had kids. Somebody on our team was like super creative, so she helped create costumes. She was Grandpa Joe's. So, I mean, that was pretty fun. We got Hershey bars and wrapped them in, you know, Wonka styling covering.
Oh, wow.
And
you guys
really
went
cool.
all out with this. Jesus.
Oh, no, yeah. We went all out. It was pretty legit. And then we also had a guy in Romania who obviously couldn't be here for Halloween. But what we did is we got him to get pictures of himself, like, making weird expressions. And then we had our graphics team, like, superimpose his face, like, to digitally enhance him into Oompa Loompas. And then we posted that around cubes. It was pretty legit.
I thought I went hard with my Tetris story. Jesus Christ. Way to just blow me out of the water with that one.
Well, hey, this was work. This is a marketing department. We had a whole bunch of people, but easily I think that's been my best costume ever. So, let's jump into actual football talk. On today's episode, we're going to get into some fantasy trick-or-treats. So we got a little bit of a Halloween episode for you. So we got fantasy trick-or-treats, just players that may be good for you. Maybe you should trade them away sort of players. We'll go through that. Then we'll jump into the NFL trade deadline. So, you know, who's on the move, who's looking to possibly get traded. We'll jump into that. Then we'll close it out with NFL quick hits. We got some Halloween-themed topics to discuss with you guys. So that will come a lot later. But as mentioned, let's start off with some fantasy trick-or-treats. So, I mean, Tad, I mean, just if you're looking through the fantasy landscape, who are some players that, you know, you like as far as, like, I should trade for these guys, I should definitely pick them off the waiver wire, just your, you know, the treats that you want to gather this year?
So, as for I'll pick them off the waiver wire, this is not part of the notes, so I'm springing this on you real quick. Any Browns receiver. And we'll get into, I should clarify, wide receiver. We'll get into Browns tight ends in a little bit. But just in my league in general, Jarvis Landry is available. The guy dropped him just last week. He dropped him. And I'm sure he regrets that now with the Odell Beckham Jr. news. But Rashard Higgins, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Jarvis Landry, if any of those guys are available on your waiver wire, go after them. So just that real quick. Now, this next guy is a guy that I will openly admit I'm biased towards because I actually just traded for him last week. And that is Julio Jones. And I know Julio Jones is really tough to trust because, A, the Falcons just suck. They blew their third, fourth lead, which is already too many this past week against the Lions, which we will talk about later. And I get that Calvin Ridley is looking a lot better, but here's the thing, especially if you're in PPR, is every game that Julio Jones is completely healthy in, he's seen at least 10 targets in every game he's played the complete time in. So, like I said, especially if you're in PPR, that's hugely valuable. Because if he catches half of that, that's 2.5 points to you right there. And of course, he's not this Julian Edelman type that's going to catch, like, you know, a pass for 2 yards. If Julio Jones is catching it, it's going for at least 5. So he's going to get the yards, he's going to get the catches, and since he's returned, the Falcons have been averaging 345 passing yards per game, which means that he's going to keep seeing these opportunities. It's not going away. And like I said, they suck, so they're going to be passing it a lot.
They definitely suck.
So while Kevin, oh my God, they're so bad. But while Kevin really is still vulturing some of those touchdowns, there's still a lot of value there.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. That's kind of like your king size candy bar that you would get from a certain neighborhood. That's like, yeah, this is a guy that you want when you're trick or treating during the Halloween season. For me, I got Dallas Goedert, the Philadelphia Eagles tight end. Obviously, the loss of Zach Ertz, that's going to open the door. Goddard's coming off the IR. He's going to be able to come and play. Obviously, the Eagles receiving core, the what tight ends, I mean, you name it on the offense, pretty much everybody except for Carson Wentz, surprisingly, is serving time on the IR. So, I mean, as soon as Dallas Goedert comes in, he's going to be a reliable target for him. And if you remember, before he got injured, Goddard was the leading target guy in this offense, targeted player in this offense through those first, I know it was only 2 weeks, but, I mean, Carson Wentz was targeting him. He's targeting him heavily, even with Zach Ertz in the offense. So as soon as he comes back, I think Goddard's going to be a great play for you, either to, if somebody dropped him on your waiver wire, definitely go up and pick him up, or try and make a trade for him before, you know, he starts to blow up and the stock is too high for him. So I'll move into another. Go for it, Ted. You got some comments on that one?
So real quick, though, I actually have to argue with you a little bit here because people I saw a bunch of people freaking out about Travis Fulgham and Greg Ward, be like, oh, these guys are the future of Philadelphia. They may well be. We'll get into this. Alshon Jeffrey has been the conversation piece around a lot of trades that could happen in the next couple days. But you have to remember, Alshon Jeffrey has been out the entire season. It's been heavily rumored he's coming back the next few weeks. DeSean Jackson made his return against the Giants this past week. Zach Ertz is not done for the season, as far as I know. So Goddard is the type of guy that if you need immediate help at tight end, go for it. But if you're looking for a season-long answer, he's not it, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I'll move to another one of my players. Local product for me, Brandon Ayuk with the San Francisco 49ers. Deebo Samuel's going on the IR again, unfortunately. He suffered a hamstring injury against the Patriots over the past weekend. Honestly, Ayuk can do a lot of what Samuel was doing in the offense last year, like some of those jet sweeps. He looks a little bit faster than Samuel, so I mean, even as a receiver, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to him. He's just looking a little bit quicker. Like I said, just the jet sweeps. He's running all versatile type of player. I think with Deebo out, they're going to use Ayuk a lot more. And currently, he's only behind George Kittle as far as target leads on the San Francisco 49ers. So I really like Ayuk as a guy that you can either pick up or trade for to acquire for your team.
I totally agree with you on this one. Completely opposite of what just happened with Goddard. But I was shocked because it didn't seem like a lot of carries because it was one of those things that every time I like tune in that game, it seemed like he was carrying the ball. But like you said, with jet sweeps and then in terms of just pure carries too, Deebo Samuel was kind of playing a Cordero Patterson role, like what the Bears do with him, but, you know, better. And yes, that was a direct shot. The Bears running a toss to Cordell Patterson on 4th-and-1 on Monday night, which was just so stupid. But anyway, I think I agree with you that Shanahan utilizes these receivers in so many dynamic ways that with Samuel out, Ayuk's the next guy up. So I absolutely believe that he is definitely a guy to keep in mind. And speaking of a guy that benefits from someone being placed on IR, my next trick is Chase Edmonds.
Well, your next trick,
I love this guy.
We haven't gotten to tricks yet.
Trick treat, whatever. Yeah, I always get mixed up. I always get this. It's terrible. I keep on doing this when we're doing our pre-show meetings, too. So my next treat, although some may see him as a trick, but I disagree with them, although I understand where they're coming from, is Chase Edmonds, okay. The running back for Arizona. So with Kenyon Drake out, obviously Chase Edmonds is going to be the unquestionable starter for Arizona, right? But even before Drake was hurt, Edmonds is arguably doing better than Drake was. Like there were some rumors that Drake may actually take the backseat role to him. So I now know, and now the Cardinals will now know, was this a system issue? Was this an offensive line issue with Kenyon Drake's struggles? Or is it a Kenyon Drake issue? I think it's the latter. Yeah. I think it's Drake's problem. I agree. So I think Chase Edmonds is going to absolutely kill it, especially because he's more receiving threat than Kenyon Drake as well. So when Drake comes back, sure, Edmonds may not be as dynamic, but if he does as well as I think it's going to be very like split carry type situation. I think Edmonds is going to make his mark here, and it's going to carry on for the rest of the season.
Serve up those Chase Edmonds.
Ah, that's a good one. That's
It came to me just
so,
now.
So bad it's good. I have to have respect for that.
You got any more players that you kind of want to go through really quickly before we get into actual tricks?
So I'll go into my last three really quickly, partially because two of them are guys that have already been doing really well, so people are gonna. I can already see people being like, well, no shit, that's a treat. Like, all right, well, fine. So one is A.J. Brown, but I feel like A.J. Brown hasn't been getting enough love quite yet because he did miss a couple games earlier this season with a knee injury, but he is clearly Ryan Tannehill's favorite target. And since he's returned from the knee injury, he has not seen less than 8 targets. And in case you haven't noticed, targets is my favorite stat when it comes to fantasy receivers. Because when they get a lot of targets, they get a lot of catches. So it lines up. So he's had 4 touchdowns in the last 3 games, including blowing up in that second half. He was a huge part of that comeback against the Steelers. I know that comeback fell short, but still, like it was close, and A.J. Brown was a huge reason for that. So if you find an owner who may not be catching on to that, or may be like, I just think this is a flash in the pan, it's not a flash in the pan. If you can give him for a discount, go for it. Another guy that I think is going to blow up big time due to some changes going on in the offense is Myles Gaskin. And it's because of some quarterback changes that we'll discuss in a little bit. But whenever the passing offense opens up for any team, which I think it will with Miami, the running game immediately benefits. And not to mention, Myles Gaskin is also a great dual threat. So I think in turn, Myles Gaskin, despite already being one of the biggest surprises this season, is only going to continue getting better. And finally, I will say Daryl Henderson. And again, I'm biased here because I actually own Daryl Henderson on my team. And I was trying to trade him away for the past 2 weeks. Now I'm holding on to him. Because in the last 3 weeks, he's had at least 14 carries. Finally, Sean McVay has settled on our guy. He will get most of the carries. Sure, Malcolm Brown is a short yardage guy, so he may vulture some touchdowns. But if a guy's getting 12 to 15 carries a week, he's a solid starting running back. So he's probably not available in your league, but I can promise you, if you trade for him right now, you will not be disappointed.
Those are solid. I only got a couple more as well. I'll go through these pretty quickly as well. They're all rookies, surprisingly.
I actually didn't even notice that.
Myles Gaskin's teammate, Tua Tagovailoa, he's been named the starter. I think he's going to come in and he's going to do what the rest of the rookie quarterback class has been doing. Justin Herbert's been showing out. Joe Burrow's been showing out. I think Tua's definitely going to show out as well. He's got a pretty good schedule ahead of him. He's going to play teams like Cincinnati, Arizona, the New York Jets, and Las Vegas. So, I mean, those are bunch of teams that he should be able to, you know, get his feet under him and get used to the NFL style. And the team is excited to play for the young kid. I mean, the Dolphins are still in the playoff hunt after 7 weeks. So I think they're going to be hungry. They may be a little bit aggressive with Tua. And I really like Tua to be a good fantasy player for the rest of the year. Next on my list, I got DeAndre Swift. I think he's finally separating himself from the pride that is the Lions backfield. Rumors are also circling that Kerryon Johnson may be traded. I know he's still playing.
In case people can't see, I'm shaking my head at the pride pun.
He is splitting time with Adrian Peterson still, but I mean, he's still looking a lot better with the touches that he is getting. He's got a good schedule as well for fantasy running backs. He's going to play Minnesota twice. Houston's pretty terrible. Washington's not that great. Carolina. Chicago has a good defense, but their run defense is so-so. And then Tennessee's also very similar to Chicago as well. So try and get after DeAndre Swift still up if he's still on the waiver wire. And the last one, I'll close it out before I get to you, Tad, for a quick comments. Denzel Mims. I know he's been hurt primarily the entire year, but he's finally healthy. And with Jameson Crowder also being in and out of the roster as well, Rashad Perriman's also not staying healthy. Biggest thing is just opportunities. You said this as well, just targets equals opportunity, which will lead to fantasy production. New York's going to be trailing in all their games. I don't doubt that at all. Yeah. So it'll lead to passing targets for Mims.
Even in a game like last week where they were 10-0, going into halftime, I believe, or at least like they were up at halftime, then the entire second half they were spent passing. So, you're so absolutely right.
I expect
Mims
to get a lot of targets and lots of opportunities to lead to some fantasy points and a really good option off the waiver wire. And, you know, if somebody already has it, maybe a really cheap trade-off for piece. But, Tad, you got any really quick comments on those?
I just want to say real quick on DeAndre Swift that you kind of mentioned this already. I know he... That split carry situation with Adrian Peterson is still a concern, a valid concern, because I do think that will kind of cut into his value. But it's very clear the Lions are trying to slowly work him more and more into this offense. So if you trade for Swift now, you may lose a couple games. But if you're confident that you can get in the playoffs, I think by those later weeks, Swift is going to be the guy in Detroit. Like, that can be one of those sneaky little pieces that really, like, blows up for 20 points and everyone's like, how the fuck did you know that was going to happen? Well, it's
a
side guy.
Really,
that's how the fuck you knew that was going to happen.
Your roster. He could be a really good playoff piece for your roster. So, Ted, let's jump into some tricks. So just
let's do it.
Opposite of trees. Just who are you not so high on? You know, this is the, you know, the gross candy that you get, the toothpaste that you sometimes get.
The Babe Ruths. Oh, God, I hate Babe Ruths.
Oh, I love Babe Ruths.
Get out of here. Coconut,
Charlie
come
Brown,
on.
You know, I got a rock, you know, something like that. Guys that you don't like. So who do you not like, Ted?
That's a reference I'm sure most of our young audience will totally understand. So my first trick is a little bit tricky on my part because I think everyone will see through this, but just in case they don't, it's Harrison Bryant, the rookie tight end in Cleveland. I get it. He just blew up for 2 touchdowns against Cincinnati. Everyone's thinking like he's the next big thing. Here's the thing. You have to remember, one, Austin Hooper had emergency appendectomy, so that's why Bryant got all this playing time. So thank you. Murray gave me the thumbs up for pronouncing that correctly, which I was struggling with earlier. So appendectomy, 2 in a row, baby. Anyway, so when Hooper comes back, he's obviously going to take over Bryant's role. And also you have to remember, I called this last week in last week's episode, Baker Mayfield has always looked good against the Bengals. I've been telling people this all week in person, like friends and everything, of being like, wow, Baker Mayfield, like he might be the answer. I'm like, no, this is what he does all the time. We always question him. He kills it against the Bengals. And we're like, oh, no, he's good all of a sudden. Like, no, he's not. He just does well against the Bengals because the Bengals are trash. So, no. So, Baker Mayfield's not trustworthy. Harrison Bryant isn't trustworthy. Don't trust either one of those guys. Just don't do it. It's a total trap. And I will remind you, I am the same person that told you, do not trust Rex Burkhead after that 30-point performance. And you know what? Since then, he has not eclipsed 10 points. Trust me, this is Rex Burkhead all over again.
I can agree with that. I think he may be good maybe for 1 or 2 more weeks after this, but he's not going to be a consistent play.
As long as Austin Hooper's out, he'll be serviceable. But the second he comes back, he's done.
Yeah, exactly. For me is actually the guy who had a sensational night on Sunday Night Football against Arizona, Tyler Lockett. He is a good
receiver. This is a take, man.
He is a good receiver. Don't get me wrong. I think he's worthy of being on your roster. I think the problem with him is very similar to how I feel about Mark Andrews, that when Mark Andrews goes off, he's going to go off for you. It's a very feast or famine sort of situation. I think Tyler Lockett's a little bit more middling, so he does a little bit better than, like, you know, poor famine sort of thing. But when he feasts. Like, it is legit good. But that's the problem. Like, most of his productions only come in 2 games this season as opposed to the entire course of the season. So DK Metcalf is the more consistent producer in this offense. Russell Wilson is cooking, so, I mean, that's another a reason why Lockett is still a little bit better than like a player like Mark Andrews, but just I think your best option right now is to trade him while his stock is incredibly high. You could get good return on him. So I think that's why he's more of a trick for me compared to being a trade.
That's an absolutely great point. If someone offers you, obviously with some other pieces involved, just straight up don't do it. But if someone offers you a trade piece with like Allen Robinson or like I said before, Julio Jones, someone you know is going to get a consistently high target rate, I would absolutely take that trade. Because you're right, like you're going to get those weeks where Lockett goes off like he did this past week for like 35, 40 points, whatever it was, and you're going to go, oh, why did I trade him? But then the next week, you're going to be like, oh, well, he only had 4 points. And that's exactly so. The Julio Jones trade that I did that I spoke about earlier, I traded away Josh Jacobs because that's exactly what Josh Jacobs is. And I'm kind of regretting not putting him as a trick right now, actually, now that I think of it. But Josh Jacobs is totally touchdown dependent. So it's like guys like that, like 1 week you're going to regret trading him, but majority of the weeks you're going to be glad you got rid of him. So I actually, you know what? You convinced me. You convinced me. Good job. Awesome. You did your job.
Well, I tried. So who else you got? A couple more tricks you got for me, Ted?
All right. So I went for a little bit of a cheat here. Any Tampa Bay wide receiver.
All right.
Any of them. Don't trust a single one of them.
We got to include that guy.
Yes, it absolutely includes him. Because who the fuck knows? I'm sorry. I think I already used my effort for this episode. But it's Halloween. We're going for super R-rated slasher type stuff. So, yeah, screw it. But, yeah, no, it absolutely includes Antonio Brown. Because no one knows how he's going to be included in this offense. Is he going to take Scotty Miller's role as the weird, like, kind of deep threat slot guy? Is he going to take Chris Godwin's role as the outside speedster? Is he going to take Mike Evans' role, which is currently non-existent? Like, it's who knows what is going to happen. And that's the entire point of all of them are just not dependable. Because Chris Godwin can't stay healthy because he's finally healthy for these past two weeks. And then he finally broke his finger. And so he's out for this next Monday night game. Like, there's no one you can depend on here. Because it's very reminiscent of the whole Patriots thing that, you know, Brady picks his favorite receiver of the game. And that guy goes off and you just don't know who it's going to be. So, no, just don't trust any Buccaneers receivers from here on out until at least week 13, which, by the way, is when most people's playoffs start. So, again, just don't start it. But I will say this. I said wide receivers on purpose because I do think now that Gronk and Brady have gotten on the same page and we've discussed this a little bit further, that is the one relationship on that offense I trust. So if you have Gronk, hold on to him. If you have a receiver, try to bail if you can get a good return for them.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very hot hand situation with Tampa Bay's receiver. It's like 1 week a guy will do good, next week a different guy will be good, another week a different guy's going to be good. But yeah, I completely agree with you. That Gronkowski connection is one that I like a ton for sure going forward. Speaking of tight ends, though, Dalton Schultz with the Dallas Cowboys, I just don't think he's a guy that
should be onto it. No, absolutely
not. Because I think with Dak Prescott, there is, you know, a treasure trove of passing targets, but, you know, now it's like, you know, that trove has gone bare. So it's like with Andy Dalton, whether it's Ben DiNucci, whoever's going to be the quarterback now, this offense is just not the same. Schultz's target share has dropped ever since Dak Prescott's been out of the lineup. So, yeah, I think it's safe to drop him from all leagues, with the exception of maybe dynasty leagues, because I think long term, when Prescott comes back or if they get a better quarterback, if it's not Prescott, I think he still has some value. But just redrafts, that let him go.
I completely agree, because even before Schultz stepped in, and that was kind of the big surprise with Schultz, was that Blake Jarwin, before he got hurt, was barely involved in that offense. And then as the same game that Jarwin went down in, Schultz had like 80 yards or something in one quarter, and everyone was like, oh my god, this Schultz guy, like, how about him? And luckily, I was one of the ones that benefited off this. I'm very glad you put him as a trick, because I picked up Schultz and then bounced him in one of my very many trades. And so I completely agree that Schultz is just totally useless here. He might, it's a lot like we talked about with Lockett, is he might have a game or two where you're like, oh, why did I drop him or why did I trade him? But like, honestly, I'd be shocked if it was even two times that happens for the rest of the season.
Yeah, so I'll just jump into my last one here. It's sort of a tease for our next topic, but Julian Edelman with the Patriots. I think no one's missing Tom Brady more than Julian Edelman, because, I mean, Jesus, with Cam Newton as a passing
especially
quarterback.
Especially seeing that Antonio Brown reunion, you know, he's just looking on the outside like, aw.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, I know he had that, you know, career receiving yardage mark in week two against the Seahawks, but since then it's been all downhill. I mean, all the other games outside of that week two game, 10 receptions, 136 receiving yards, no touchdowns. He didn't have a receiving touchdown in that week two game either. It's been all receiving yards. So, I mean, just, yeah, I think Edelman, unfortunately, is, you know, even though he's a big name, I think at this point he's a guy that you could drop too.
I agree. Especially because, and you kind of hinted at this, there any receiver on the trade block right now or the trade rumors, AJ Green, Alshon Jeffrey, we'll go into this a little deeper in the next segment. Every single one of them, the first team that comes to mind with possible landing spots is New England. So let's say even Cam Newton gets his shit together, and we'll talk about this in quick hits. There are reasons Cam might be struggling outside of that he's just not good anymore, which I actually don't believe. But even if Cam gets his shit together and Julian Edelman is still healthy, if they do bring in another receiver, which is looking increasingly likely, he will lose target rates. It's just like that offense is just fantasy nightmare fuel right now. Like, speaking of Halloween, like, that thing is scarier than freaking Freddy Krueger. Like, I wouldn't touch that with, you know, if I was Jason Voorhees, I'd be running the other direction.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, there's no one on that offense I trust at all. And Julian Edelman is a good player. I completely believe that. I would put him on par with Wes Welker's talent level. But unfortunately, it's not looking like he's going to be dependable. So if you have Julian Edelman, and like I said, if you're in a league like mine where Jarvis Landry is available, I would honestly consider dropping Julian Edelman for Jarvis Landry, which tells you something, because I've shit on Baker Mayfield all season. I will continue to do so.
Exactly. So that's our sort of, you know, fantasy trick or treats. We're not a fantasy podcast, so I mean, we didn't go super in depth with all these guys. I mean, you can find better content elsewhere, but, you know, just sort of wanted to give you a little lay of the land as far as what me and Tad both think about, you know, just some players out there. So, you know, take the advice for what you want. So we kind of talked about the fantasy football landscape as far as, you know, tricks or treats and, you know, players that you may want to be trading for, but let's take it into reality. So the NFL trade deadline is right around the corner. There's been a bunch of trades that's happened already, so I mean, let's just go through these really quickly. Carlos Dunlap, defensive end with the Cincinnati Bengals, he is now a Seattle Seahawk. Seattle acquires Dunlap for offensive lineman B.J. Finney and a 2022 seventh round pick, so not a bad deal for Seattle Seahawks to make that trade to acquire Carlos Dunlap, who was unhappy in Cincinnati anyways. Moving along, we got Yannick Ngakoue. This is sort of interesting. So he was traded from Jacksonville to Minnesota on August 30th for a 2021 second round pick and a 2022 conditional fifth round pick. And then, yeah, now he is traded on again. Looks like Minnesota is looking to shed some cap space, and probably they couldn't sign him. Or I'm surprised they traded for him in the first place if they knew they couldn't sign him. But, yeah, he's traded again. He is now a Baltimore Raven. He got traded for a 2021 third-round pick and a 2022 conditional fifth-round pick. So kind of recouping the draft capital that they gave up to Jacksonville to acquire him in the first place. Moving on, we got Everson Griffin, defensive end with the Cowboys. He moves on to Detroit for a 2021 conditional sixth round pick, because, you know, Dallas is clearly, I don't think they're competing this year, so they probably gave him a chance to go to Detroit, maybe compete for a playoff spot. Even Detroit's chances are a little slim too, but whatever, he's not a Dallas Cowboy anymore. Next, we got Marcus Golden, a promising, you know, pass rush specialist, outside linebacker. He was with the Giants. The Cardinals acquired Golden from the Giants for a 2021 sixth-round pick. My 49ers, they made a move. Jordan Willis, defensive end with the New York Jets. He was acquired along with the 2021 seventh-round pick. Niners had to give up a 2022 sixth-round pick, so I'll take that any day of the week. I mean, come on. If I'm giving a draft pick 2 years from now for a player that can help us now.
A sixth-round draft pick, too.
Exactly. Exactly. For a player that can help right now, plus I get a seventh round pick for next year, I'll do that. I'll do that all the time. And then the last one, this one's kind of interesting. So Steve McClendon, maybe not a household name, but defensive tackle with the New York Jets. He got acquired by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for a McClendon and a 2023 seventh round pick were traded to Tampa Bay for the New York Jets. They got a sixth round pick in 2022. But here's the interesting thing. So he played against the Miami Dolphins, but he knew about his trade before playing in that game. But he played the game anyway. So, I mean, If he got injured, the trade would have been voided. So I'm very surprised that the team decided to play him. Luckily, he didn't get hurt. He played through the entire game. He wanted to roll one more time with his Jets homies. And yeah, now he's a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. So, I mean, that was pretty cool that he wanted to play with his, you know, former teammates one last time. But yeah, very, very risky in case he got hurt. That would have been bad for all parties involved. Dude, but luckily, it's good for all parties
involved.
Could
you imagine the Jets GM watching that entire game of just like, can we just bench him, please? Like, oh, no. that's unnecessary roughness. Eject him. Eject him out of here.
Exactly. Edge of his seat, you know, nails bitten down to the nub. I mean, it would have been so many things just watching him every time he's at the play.
I mean, that's the most excitement you're ever going to get out of a Jets game this season.
Exactly. So, Tad, I mean, there's a bunch of trades that just happened. I mean, do you have any thoughts on any of them that happened? Were they good trades, bad trades? Just give me your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, let's run through it in the same order you did. So first, the most recent one as a recording, the Carlos Dunlap trade. I love it for both teams. I thought it was a great idea for Cincinnati to kind of jettison him off the roster because you spoke to this. He already said he wasn't very happy in Cincinnati. There were some reports that he was causing some locker room troubles of just, you know, frankly, just kind of being an asshole.
yeah.
And not that I blame him. If I was stuck in Cincinnati for close to a decade, I'd be pretty upset too. So yeah, so clearly he wanted to go to contender and he got that in Seattle, and Seattle desperately needed him too, because we talked about that a lot, is that Seattle's a good team, but the only reason they're good is because the offense. That defense has more holes in it than Swiss cheese.
I will make one point. I was very nervous when this trade happened because I was like, oh no, is he going to play on Sunday against San Francisco? I think by the time the trade processes and he has to go through COVID testing and a physical, he won't be able to play this weekend, which is, I took a sigh of relief after hearing that. So most likely he'll be eligible by week 9. The following week. So I just wanted to throw that in there for any Niners fans listening.
No, that's a good point, because I think COVID testing is saving you there, because it's much easier. That's always something with trades that's interesting, is if you trade for an offensive guy, they have to learn the playbook much more in depth. If you trade for defensive end, it doesn't matter if they know the playbook or not. Like, they will have more responsibilities later on, but it's basically like 3 days after the trade, hey, just go get the quarterback. Like, no matter what, just go get him. Just like, you know what, we'll rush, we'll figure it out for you later. So I think the COVID thing is saving you. but yeah, Seattle, like, yeah, that defense needs help everywhere. So it basically, like, any defensive player they get would be an upgrade. So yeah, so it's a great trade for Seattle. They really didn't give up much. And then for Cincinnati, we've also talked about this a lot, is offensive line is clearly the weakest position group for them. And Finney is his name, right? Do I have that correctly?
BJ Finney, yes.
BJ Finney, yes, thank you. He has played well as a backup for most of his career, which is why I don't know his name, because he's mostly been a backup. But you know what? Like, at this point, it's kind of the same deal as Seattle's defense, is if you can get anyone on that offensive line group, then that's an upgrade. Like, just the more bodies, the better. Like, you just got to keep throwing darts at the board until something sticks. So, yeah, neither team gave up a huge amount of draft capital. Both teams benefited in their own ways. So that was a great trade. Now, moving on to a not-so-great trade, Yannick Ngakoue. I don't understand. This is like a drunk man trade. Like, where you're like, oh, yeah, I'll take this guy. And then, like, the CPU is just like, yeah, I don't want to sign with you. And you're like, all right, well, screw you. You know, trade him after, like, 5 weeks. But here's the whole thing is, that's Madden. That's not real life. Like, if you're a real life GM, you're supposed to run a team better than that. Why would you ever trade for Ngakoue if you didn't already have a deal in place, or at least some kind of talks of like, all right, we're going to get there? It really did seem like they just traded for him because he was good, which he is. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, we can't sign you. Okay, so what can we get back? So basically you just gave up a second round pick for a third and 2 5th round picks. So sure, you can argue, well, yeah, we gave up a second round pick, but we have more picks now. Sure, but like, why even like go through that? Like, that's just an unnecessary downgrade in term for quantity. Like, it just makes no sense to me.
Well, they actually didn't get an extra pick, so they traded away a second and a fifth to get him, and then when they traded him again, they got back a third and a fifth. So pretty much they got their fifth back, and then they dropped from a second to a third.
So
that's what
happened. You gave up your second round pick for a third round pick. Awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's and honestly, this makes me wonder if that's why Mike Zimmer hasn't been fired yet, because I wonder if Minnesota ownership, the Wolves, know that it's not Zimmer's fault, we just hired bad personnel. So I honestly think that might be what's going through their minds right now. On the opposite end of that, for the Ravens, this is an A+ trade for them.
Rich get richer.
Exactly, and this is why the Ravens are so good, and they're consistently good for 20 years because they make no-brainer moves like this. They find the suckers, and they take advantage of them.
And honestly, with Pittsburgh being undefeated still at the time of this recording and Cleveland looking really good too, it's like you need that defensive help. Even though they already have a stout defense, adding an extra piece can always help you.
Well, so I'm glad you brought up their already stout defense. So an interesting note is what the Ravens have done is they've combined the two outside edge rushers of the 2017 Jacksonville Jaguars defense. Calais Campbell and Yannick Ngakoue.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That
and both
very,
of them are still
crazy.
Killing it. It's not even like they're both like getting up. Well, Ngakoue is still pretty young. Calais Campbell's getting up there a little bit. I think he's in his lower 30s, if I remember correctly. But either way, like both of them are still pretty good players. So basically, you're taking a two key pieces of a defense that carried a terrible offense to the AFC Championship and honestly probably should have beaten that Patriots team. You combine them together with Patrick Queen, Lamar Jackson, Marquise Hollywood-Brown. You know, that just the entire, like, for the first time ever, those two have great offenses to go around with them. Like, it's a great trade for Baltimore. The other two that you mentioned, Marcus Golden, not too much to say about this because obviously the Cardinals had to do something with Chandler Jones, went down with the season-ending injury. So you knew the Cardinals were going to do something. I personally thought it was going to be something in free agency. I like this more. Marcus Golden going back to his old team, the team that drafted him in Arizona. You know, best case scenario is never down linebacker and he's like a B to B plus player for you. Worst case scenario, he's a pretty good situational pass rusher. Both teams get draft capital. I like it. McLendon, like you said, this obviously happened. He's already played his first game as a Buck this past weekend. Yeah, I mean, the Bucks clearly are all in on the season. And they know it, so they gave something up to kind of beef up that defense that hasn't really been played. As of recently, they've corrected this, but early on in the season, they weren't playing to how talented they were. So the Bucks clearly wanted to address that somehow. So, again, good trade for both teams. There are a lot of good trades going on here. And what's even more exciting, I don't think we're done yet.
No, that's a great point that you made up. So these are all the trades that happen, but I mean, just looking at the rumor mill and seeing just what teams are buyers and what teams are sellers and things along those lines, I mean, based on what I've sort of read and seen, looks like the Packers are looking to upgrade at wide receiver. Very surprised they didn't do it in the draft, but looks like they're competitive now. They want to make a move. There are some names out there like Will Fuller they're sort of interested in. AJ Green is rumored to be on the trade block. The Niners are shopping Dante Pettis. Giants looking to be shopping Golden Tate. So, I mean, there's some good receivers out there, good veteran presence, pair up with Davante Adams and the receivers that they have. So, not bad. We'll see what happens there. Eagles are looking to flip Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, just ever since he came to Philadelphia, he had the good 1 year. He signed a prove-it deal in Philadelphia. He balled out. He got the extension.
He proved it.
Yeah, he proved it. Then he got that extension. Then unfortunately, just injuries have sort of derailed his career. Like, I mean, he's still been able to produce the times he has seen the field, but the times he sees the field is so few and far between, unfortunately, that it's like, yeah, I think they just need to move on from him now. Sensational years at Chicago, so the potential is still there. We'll see what happens with him. And also, it looks like the Eagles are interested in a starting linebacker, so they want to acquire to upgrade over some of the guys they already have. So, I mean, we'll see what happens there. There's some names out there like Avery Williamson in New York with the Jets. Miles Jack, a good player out of UCLA with Jacksonville, maybe on the block. Jarrod Davis with Detroit, he could be a potential acquisition, so look for the Eagles to possibly make a move, and also the Steelers too in the linebacker market as well, because they lost Devin Bush for the rest of the year. They may be able to make do with what they have, but you know, if you can make a move for the right price, you know, Kevin Colbert's a pretty smart GM, so if he can make a move for, you know, not too much giving up, then I wouldn't be surprised if they decide to make a move as well. Sellers, looks like Washington, I mean, kind of obvious, Cincinnati, Atlanta, the New York Jets, Jacksonville, Houston, Minnesota, they're listening to offers on pretty much their entire roster, so I mean, teams are calling them for various players, you know, we'll see what happens there. Other players that are just rumored to be out there as far as being involved in trade rumors, Tack McKinley of Atlanta, Ryan Fitzpatrick possibly, Dwayne Haskins we've talked about before, Kerryon Johnson.
Fitzpatrick to the Patriots confirmed.
It is a possibility.
Fun fact, by the way, if that does happen, which it obviously clearly won't, if Fitzpatrick ever does play for the Patriots, he will have played for every single team of the AFC East.
That's very true. That's very true. Kerryon Johnson in Detroit may get moved. Evan Ingram just was circulating as far as rumors recently. Tight end with the Giants. Kyle Rudolph in Minnesota. Ryan Kerrigan in Washington. Stephon Gilmore, your defensive player of the year last year, is sort of, you know, I don't know how serious those rumors are, but he could be on the block. Akella Witherspoon with San Francisco, he's on the block. And both safeties in Minnesota as well. Harrison Smith, Anthony Harris. There's a rumor that Cleveland's Kevin Stefanski, obviously former coach of Minnesota, he may be interested in acquiring some of his former players back in Minnesota. I unloaded a lot on you, Tad. Take what you want from there. And give me your thoughts.
We've got about 10 minutes to discuss about the 24 players you just named. So what's the problem there?
Players, teams, everything. Just dive into any of that. Any players that you have, any other players that you may have on your mind as far as could be candidates get moved or should be moved. So yeah, have at it, Tad.
So there's, you know what, this is what I love about the NFL trade deadline is despite it ultimately ending in the, you know, biggest disappointment ever because all these big names are out there, it's still fun to talk about just what could happen. So because of that, I want to talk about some big names out there that are actually likely to get traded.
And really quick, I want to interject because we were talking about this before we decided to do this segment. That's like the NFL trade deadline has sort of picked up over the past couple years. It's nowhere near like the NBA trade deadline or the MLB trade deadline, like just flurry of moves, big names going everywhere and anywhere. But definitely you're seeing a lot more moves than you used to see like maybe 5-10 years ago. So it's definitely interesting to see players being on the move. So yeah, have at it. Let's see it. Let's hear your thoughts.
I totally agree. But I mean, like you said, like there could be some big names on the move. And had this happened a decade ago, or had this been a decade ago, these type of moves never would have happened. And that's why I love that the deadline is finally starting to turn into a thing, which,
exactly.
By the way, I don't know if it's just me, if like I started noticing it as I got older. I don't think so. I think the Carson Palmer trade, when it was the Cincinnati to Oakland, was the first time – RIP Oakland Raiders, by the way. Never forgotten. But that was the first time I kind of noticed a big trade deadline move. And ever since then, it feels like all teams are like, oh, okay, this can't happen. But anyway, I digress. So the first one I want to talk about, for very obvious reasons, is my man Aaron Rodgers. I've said it 1,000 times on the show, and you know what? Until he retires, and probably after he retires, I'm going to say it 1,000 times more. The Packers have done a shit job at giving him weapons. And like you said, there have been reports that they finally realized that, hey, maybe we should give one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever live an actually good receiving core, which, hey, who would have thought about that novel idea? So,
and there's actually a rumor that they were interested in Zach Ertz before he got injured, so that would have been interesting to see if that would have played out. But, yeah, he got injured, so he's not going anywhere.
Yeah. So, honestly, like I like Alshon Jeffrey a lot, but like you said, with injury concerns, and plus, like, there's a lot of stuff with this contract if we have time, we'll get into, but I won't get into it right now. So, Alshon Jeffrey might get moved, probably not. Will Fuller is a guy I think is more likely to get moved because there have been more rumors about that happening. And plus, we've already talked about this, that the Texans should do a reboot. They should just go for the hard rebuild and stuff. I've seen a couple rumors of like, oh, this team should trade J.J. Watt. That seems more like fan dreams than any substantial reports. The substantial reports about Will Fuller. So it looks like the Texans are doing kind of like a soft reboot. So kind of like what DC Comics is doing with their movies, if you're a nerd. Like, we're not getting rid of everyone, but like there are going to be a lot of new people here. So Will Fuller is interesting because his contract's pretty team friendly, and he has a very interesting skill set where he has good size. I believe he's around 6'2", 6'1", something around that. And also he's got that speed too. So like, if you want to be the number one guy that we've seen that Houston's been trying to turn him into this year, it's going well, but it's not great. But as we've seen in the past, he's a fantastic number two. Like, he is the perfect prototypical number two receiver. So that's why I think Green Bay should absolutely go for him, because him next to Devontae Adams with Aaron Jones in there, assuming Aaron Jones gets healthy and he's good for the rest of the season, that's a scary offense. So, but okay, let's say the Packers don't go for him. Another couple teams that could consider him. The Chiefs are apparently very interested in him, with Sammy Watkins going in and out with injuries. Pringles not looking as good as people had hoped. I know he had a kind of promising rookie year. So Kansas City with their salary cap voodoo magic, I still don't understand how they're doing it, but they could make it work. I believe that now.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, three other teams is the Patriots have been rumored to be interested in wide receiver. I don't think they'll do it because that doesn't really seem the Patriots' way of bringing in a guy midseason, but still someone to keep your mind on. Here's my dark horse candidate team to bring in a receiver. Maybe Will Fuller, maybe Alshon Jeffrey, maybe someone else. The Tennessee Titans.
Okay.
Think about it. Like, Corey Davis did do okay while A.J. Brown was out, but still not looking great. Adam Humphries is good in the slot, but he still doesn't have that size where if you need to drive down the field, if you're, you know, coming back against a team like, I don't know, the undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers, you need to start throwing it deep. I don't know, just a hypothetical I randomly thought of. You need that size and speed of receiver that I talked about. So Will Fuller could potentially be a Tennessee Titan. If he was with any other team but the Texans, I'd say that happened. But
that's very true.
I don't think a divisional opponent is going to land him.
That's the biggest linchpin. Since you're trading within the division, I don't see it happening. But, you know, you make a fair point, so you can't rule it out.
Also, the Arizona Cardinals. I know Andy Isabella's been looking good. I know Christian Kirk's been looking good. But still, it just feels like they need another weapon, like true weapon, opposite DeAndre Hopkins there. What do you think about that?
It's not bad, but, you know, it's interesting because they have good weapons. Like, I mean, Fitzgerald is still Fitzgerald. I mean, I know he's sort of slowed down, and he's definitely going to Christian Kirk a lot. But, yeah, DeAndre Hopkins is his, like, you know, BFF. It's literally every pass is going to DeAndre Hopkins. So it really will be surprising to see, like, if DeAndre Hopkins ends up, you know, has a freak accident, he has to miss some time. It's like, how is this offense going to look? So yeah, having an insurance like a Will Fuller could definitely help support your offense and give you some more depth, more quality depth, I should say. So yeah, I would rule it out, but I think they're pretty set at wide receiver, so I don't see it happening.
No, that's totally fair. I'd be shocked. Of all the teams I just listed, it would probably be the Cardinals or Titans. I'd be the most shocked. But again, yeah. I'm telling you, don't count the Chiefs. Chiefs are known to make these, like, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming moves because, man, when they're in, which I give them props to. The final player I want to talk about because, you know, I would love to talk about Alshon Jeffrey and Xavier Howard, who was also the subject of a lot of rumors. But in all honesty, guys, I don't think they're going to get moved. I know that's probably going to bite me in the ass because by the time this is published, probably both of them are going to be moved. But
you never know.
We'll see. Yeah, exactly. So, but the one player I actually do think truly will be moved before the trade deadline is Tack McKinley, the guy you mentioned with the Falcons.
Right.
So
former
clearly
first round
giving,
pick just hasn't panned out. Yeah.
Yeah. First round pick at UCLA. I didn't love that pick at the time. I never understood why he was getting hyped up as a first rounder. And, you know, not to, you know, toot my own horn here, but yeah, I was right. Because he didn't look bad. He hasn't looked bad, but he just hasn't looked great either. But here's the thing. So his first two seasons, in my notes I say, yeah, great first 2 years. I should probably downgrade that. But he has solid 2 years with 6 and 7 sacks, which for of a more run-stopping defensive end, that's pretty good. The problem is since then he's really dropped off and everyone's been like, where is he at? Which is another reason why Dan Quinn's been fired. Because they were like, dude, you're a defensive coach. Like, why can you not get the most out of this kid? And we've talked about that enough already. So I he strikes me as the type of guy that really it's a change of scenery is what he needs. I really think there's still enough promise there to at least go for it. So let's talk about potential landing spots for him. I know they just traded for Carlos Dunlap, but like I said, Seahawks defense needs help everywhere. Why not go for another edge rusher? So Seattle I could see happening. My Indianapolis Colts I could see happening because I said just a couple weeks ago, Indianapolis looks like the best defense in the league. Well, the past couple weeks, that hasn't looked so sure. I think that was – I'm getting a little concerned that it was just a flash in the pan and they just happened to be playing well. So shore up that defense because, crazy enough, Phillip Rivers looked pretty legit against the Bengals and they had bye week this past week. So you know what? Shore up that defense. Go for it. Cleveland Browns. Put someone opposite Myles Garrett. I know that defensive line is already pretty talented, but, like, you can never have too many pass rushers in today's game. And then finally, the Los Angeles Rams. The defense is clearly where what needs the most work on that team. Not to say that defense is bad, but it could use some improvement. So why not? Now, the problem with the Rams, though, they're at the bottom of my list because we talked about this previously. They have practically no draft capital left. So I don't know what you trade for them. But if I call up Atlanta, I'm like, hey, you want a 7th and a 6th like 2 years from now? And they say yes. Dude, I'm taking that if I'm the Rams. Why not?
Honestly, because of Tack McKinley's production dropping every single year he's been in the league, I don't think it's going to take a lot to acquire him. So honestly, I'm going to say every NFC West team should try at least make a phone call about him, because I think the Niners obviously have been
Niners
ravaged with
pick. I didn't even think about that. Actually.
Niners have been ravaged with industry, so they could injuries, excuse me, so they could use some depth. Seattle, obviously, their pass rush is, you know, god awful, so they could use some help. The Rams have a pretty good defense, but like you said, it never hurts to have extra pass rush. And the Cardinals, they keep bringing, you know, Buda Baker and Byron Murphy on these corner blitzes, safety blitzes. Keep them in coverage and bring in a guy like Tack McKinley to rush the passer.
I forgot.
And then you have a better
secondary. Finally getting interceptions this year. Like, keep it back there. Come on.
Exactly. So it's like, yeah, I could see almost any NFC West team trying to make a move for it. But yeah, honestly, I don't think it'll take a lot to trade for him. And yeah, seriously, lots of teams out there, especially all those teams that are in contention for a playoff spot, they need to at least make a phone call that's like, hey, what are you listening to? You know, like you said, it's like, if I could get him for like at least a fifth, then it's like, why not? Take a chance, place a, like I said, change of scenery, hopefully it'll work out. And if it doesn't, then all it did is cost you like a fifth, possibly a sixth round pick, a day three pick essentially.
And here's what drives me nuts about the NFL trade deadline and the NFL in general, is they overvalue their draft picks too much.
That's true.
Like, I feel like if a fan base was like, we gave up a fifth round pick for McKinley, like, what are we doing? Think of it this way. Do you really honestly expect your fifth round pick, whoever that might have been, to outplay a guy who you already know what you're getting? Like, I get, like, the unknown is more exciting and everything, but, like, if you – yeah, if Atlanta was willing to give McKinley up for a 6th and 7th round pick, I'm confident enough that no 6th and 7th round pick will outplay McKinley for however long I have him. So, like, that's what you need to keep in mind with all of this. Is I know it's scary giving up draft picks, but people need to keep in mind that draft picks are not as valuable as the NFL wants you to believe they are.
I will say, though, with next year and the salary cap situation, I think draft picks for next year's draft are a little bit more valuable, because you could obviously get a player for a cheaper contract. You don't have to go out in free agency to spend to fill some of your holes on your team. So I could argue that maybe next year's draft picks are a little bit more valuable compared to previous years. But yeah, I think if there's a player out there that you kind of know, you could kind of see the potential there, you should try and at least field some offers, make some phone calls, and just see what you can get. So yeah, we'll see what happens. We still got, you know, a handful of days left until the trade deadline. We'll see how it all plays out. Okay, bringing back a segment that we sort of introduced, you know, a couple weeks ago, and one that we sort of like to get to a bunch of topics really quickly. So we got a special Halloween edition of NFL Quick Hits. Okay, so first we got, you know, the New England Patriots House of Horrors.
Scariest
so you got
haunted house ever.
So, obviously, you got Bill Belichick. You know, he tried to build his Frankenstein's monster of a team. He let Brady go, brought in Cam Newton, all the COVID guys that opted out of the season, had to cobble together a defense. Through 7 weeks, it hasn't really been working. This monster is not very scary in my eyes. You got the first 2 weeks, looked pretty good. But since then, I mean, just you saw that game against San Francisco. They are just not looking like a team that's going to be competitive this year, maybe next year too, who knows. But that speaks to Cam Newton as well, because I mean, he wowed us in those first 2 weeks. Scored 5 total touchdowns, only 1 interception, 552 passing yards, completion percentage over 70% in those 2 games. But since then, he had COVID, obviously. He's only had 3 more starts since then. 2 total touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 470 passing yards. That completion percentage dropped to 63%. So I mean, just yeah, this is a bit of a, you know, scary situation for New England. What do you think, Dad?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought the Frankenstein reference, because you know the part in, you know, Frankenstein, Young Frankenstein, where they're like, it's alive, it's alive. Now this offense is pretty dead. It's like
yeah.
The opposite.
It was
of
alive for 2 weeks,
yeah,
and now
no,
it's
exactly.
Dying.
So it's tough though, because I don't really blame Cam Newton for this for 2 reasons. One, the type of passes they're asking him to make have never been his type of game. You know, like, air it to medium deep level, do it accurately, do it smartly. Like, that's never been his thing. It's always been kind of West Coast quick, like, dump it off passes. and RPOs and stuff like that. And also another thing that you need to keep in mind, something that you mentioned, Cam did test positive for COVID a couple weeks ago. And you know what? This isn't even specific to COVID. I think this is just a universal truth, is if someone gets the flu or a really bad case of the cold, they're not feeling back to 100% until at least 2 weeks after they're quote-unquote fully recovered. Like, your head's still kind of cloudy, you're still kind of like breaking out of that mold of just like, I'm not feeling great. But if you look at some of the research with COVID, and yes, I know for some reason that's been politicized, if it, is it true or not, but for now we're going to assume that, you know, the truth is the truth, which is controversial somehow. But anyway, I digress. Is, so COVID apparently has a more significant impact on your minds. Like, it takes longer to break out of that kind of cloudy effect that, you know, most sicknesses have on your mind for weeks afterwards. And honestly, I think that would be a perfect explanation for what's going on. Because like you said, those six interceptions that Cam has thrown, none of them have really been the receiver's fault. None of them have just been like, oh, that was a great play by their defense. They've all been like, what are you doing? And you also left out the fact that he fumbled two or three times against the Broncos last week. And it's just like, he's not, you can just tell he's just not the same guy. Which, if this was happening in the earlier weeks of the season, I totally would agree that, like, okay, yeah, Cam's just washed at this point. But, like, we've seen Cam still got it. So something else is going on. And that something else is COVID. And also another thing, I don't think it's Belichick, because I think Belichick's earned the benefit of the doubt at this point. So I'm not going to place the blame on him yet. I'm going to blame this on Josh McDaniels. And yes, I am kind of so bitter that Josh McDaniels totally screwed my Colts by saying, like, I'll take the job. And then, you know, at the last minute, be like, eh, never mind. But at the same time, I'm kind of glad that happened, because I never understood why everyone was so in love with him all over again. Because we talked about this with my rant against Patricia. These Patriots coordinators and assistants, they're not good. Joe Judge isn't good. Patricia isn't good. McDaniels isn't good when he was with Denver. So why the hell is everyone thinking McDaniels is good again? And this is finally the proof that Josh McDaniels does not know how to properly coach an offense, and it was only Tom Brady that made him good. All the Patriots falters lie on Josh McDaniels' shoulders.
Yeah, run game has been good, but I mean, you can also attribute this to the defense. I mean, the run defense is, you know, I like to analogize it to a bunch of ghosts. They could look scary, or they look scary, but you can run right through them. I mean, it's just like, they're not going to be stopping anybody. Pass defense is not as dominant as last season either. Belichick suffered his worst home loss since he began coaching the Patriots. Third straight loss, which hasn't happened since the 2002 season, where they lost four in a row. That was one of four seasons that Bill Belichick did not make the playoffs. Ted, have we gotten our answer as far as who made the Patriots, Belichick versus Brady?
This is tough for me. So for years, I've been a huge defender. I don't think I've ever given this rant on the show quite yet, but I've been a massive defender of that Belichick made Brady, Brady didn't make Belichick. So I'm like, look at Ryan Mallett and Matt Castle and Jim Garoppolo. Like, all these guys succeed in the Patriots system. Like, it's clearly not Brady. Honestly, this is the first time, this sounds dramatic, but it's not. This is the first time in my entire life I'm questioning it. I honestly think that it might have been Brady. And if this is the case, I will cede the greatest ever title to Brady from Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I think you have a lot of reasoning behind that. I mean, just the Patriots have been looking really bad, and Tom Brady has been cruising with the Buccaneers, who are now 5-2. Let's transition into some nightmare endings. I mean, this weekend had some interesting endings for lots of games, not just the professional level.
This was a nightmare for us. This was Freddy Krueger's freaking dreamland right here.
Very interesting. We got two actually from the college football games, and these games happened on Saturday. Rice versus Middle Tennessee State. Not a double doink like with Chicago a couple years ago, but this was a quadruple doink. I mean, both teams missed field goals to start overtime. Rice got possession in the second overtime, had a 35-yard field goal, but it was negated by a false start, resulted in a 40-yard field goal, which is doable, but I can't even explain the physics on this one, Tad. It's amazing. Bounces off the kicker's viewpoint, so it bounces off the right post, bounces to the bottom post, bounces to the left post, bounces on the bottom post again and does not fall through. It falls back into the field, and so it's a no-good play. Middle Tennessee ends up scoring on the next overtime drive, and they win the game. But, I mean, just quadruple doink. I can't even – I explained it. It's still hard for me to comprehend.
It's insane. So I actually didn't even hear about this until you texted me late Saturday night, be like, did you see that? And I was like, see what? Like, no. Of course I'm not watching the Rice whatever game. I'm like, why the hell would I watch Rice?
It's true.
And to your credit, you said, like, look it up. I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'm so glad you did, because I was expecting, like, some crazy fumble or something. And it was insane. It was just, and I texted you this, and I still stand by this, just by the pure physics and how football is shaped.
Yeah.
Like, that's why we don't play football with a round ball. It's because, like, the way the oval shape just has crazy things about it. But, like, it should have gone in on one of those doinks.
Yeah.
It's insane. I can already hear Chicago Bears fans in my head going, like, well, you know, like, the double doink was still worse because of the playoffs and blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm sorry. No, the double doink wasn't worse, because imagine that heartbreak of seeing it bounce once, twice, and then you're like, oh, no. Now imagine that four times.
Yeah. It's
and double overtime.
Insanity.
Like, it's just insane. It was, honestly, that probably is the weirdest football play I've ever seen in my life.
It's definitely up there. Let's transition into a similar play that happened both in the NFL and also in college. So we got, let's start with the college level first. Penn State versus Indiana. You got running back Devin Ford. Penn State is leading in this game. They literally just need to run out the clock. Indiana has one timeout left, but pretty much if they get a first down, they're in the red zone. If they get a first down, they can pretty much kneel out the clock and they'll win the game. Instead, Indiana gives Devin Ford a max-sized truck of a hole to let him score because they want the ball back. Devin Ford just not sure what he needs to do. Just to sort of preface this, starting running back for Penn State, Noah Cain, he got injured early in the game, so he went out. Ford started to take more of a contributed role. Maybe he was just thrust into the situation, just not knowing what to do. He was looking at both sidelines. He was just like, should I score? Should I not score?
I think he was more confused, like you said, the fact that he was just like, oh, wow, I have this massive hole. Like, all right, cool.
Maybe and that's like, part of it, too.
When he hits the three-yard line, he's like, wait, why do I have so much room? And that's when you can kind of tell everything started falling apart.
Exactly. So he actually crosses the goal line. Then he starts to realize, oh, maybe I should have. Then you hear about it. Indiana comes back. They play in overtime. Sure, there's a questionable two-point conversion at the very end of the game by Indiana quarterback Michael Penix Jr. But still, it shouldn't have even gotten to that point, possibly. And then on top of that, you go to the NFL, where you have Todd Gurley versus the Detroit Lions. He was about to be tackled. He somehow breaks the tackle. Detroit has no timeouts left, so literally if he falls down in the field of action, not scoring a touchdown, Atlanta Falcons win this game. But somehow he stumbling forward, bumbling, you know, as Chris Berman would say.
Yeah, I was about to say, good job, Berman.
He crosses the goal line on accident, scores a touchdown, gives Detroit a chance to sort of march down the field, score a game-winning touchdown with time expiring. And, yeah, I mean, you can argue that the defense still should have stopped on both situations, but, yeah, I think you need to know that veteran sort of sets a mind. In the college level, just coaches need to be relaying that stuff, but just, Tad, I mean, take all that information for what you want and dissect it.
I can't believe the same situation happened back to back.
That's very true.
I don't know if you mentioned this or not, but like Penn State was number 8 in the country, first game of the season. Yeah. They lose to Indiana, who's been a doormat in the Big Ten. Like, it's just amazing. And then honestly, this may be a little controversial. I don't think Todd Gurley actually broke the plane. I don't think that should have been a touchdown.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
I define the plane as, maybe I need to brush up my NFL rules. Like, it needs to cross the thick white line in the end zone, right?
And it did.
All the way though.
No, it only needs to cross goal line.
So I was about to say, okay, so clearly I do need to brush up on my. Okay. So he did cross the goal line, but like still, like Gurley's was so, for pure comedic value, was so much funnier.
Oh yeah.
Because you could tell he like realized it. He tried to stop himself, but just by like pure momentum, he like fell into the end zone. Yeah. It was absolutely hilarious. And yeah, I think it was just amazing that it happened twice, especially because in both cases, Penn State and Detroit, neither team had two timeouts, or had any timeouts, excuse me. So it was just like, alright, we might have lost this, but still, like, they'll have to do pretty good on this drive. In both cases, they did amazing. Like, it wasn't even in question of, like, after, like, two plays, you're like, oh, they're gonna score here. Like, okay. Like, it was truly a nightmare ending for a lot of, for these teams, but, like, it was a dream ending for me, because it was just great football comedy at its finest.
So Indiana did have one timeout, Detroit had no timeouts, but I mean, yeah, pretty okay, much very similar go. Situations. Very surprising that they happened in the same weekend. Let's move into some more fun topics. Obviously, you know, this is the week of Halloween. These two topics aren't NFL-related, more just Halloween-related. So CandyStore.com, they came out with a best and worst candy of 2020. What they did is they compiled a list of the best and worst candies from publications like BuzzFeed, Thrillist, Mental Floss, Huffington Post, I mean, so many of these. And then they also surveyed 20,000 of their own customers from CandyStore.com, took all that data, used a number system in Excel to tally the data, and they came up with a top 10 list for best candies and a top 10 list for worst candies. So, Tad, I'm going to run through these really fast. I'm going to start with the worst candy list. At number 10, okay, you got black licorice. Number 9, you got...
At only number 10, that's surprising. Black licorice is pretty terrible.
Number 9 is Good and Plenty, which is, you know, kind of black licorice's second cousin.
Okay, well, all right.
It's like
Mike
and Ike, except tastes like licorice, essentially.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Number 8, I never heard of this one before. It's called Mary Jane's. They're peanut butter and molasses taffy-style candy under the Necco brand. So just...
I'm not going to lie. That sounds pretty good to me.
All right. Well, to each their own.
I like molasses. I like peanut butter. I like taffy-style. Like, come on. Give it to me.
Number
a shot.
Number 7, I was surprised. Tootsie Rolls came in at number 7.
Tootsie Rolls suck. I'm so happy with this one.
All right.
Tootsie Rolls are terrible.
Necco wafers.
They're chewy chocolate. Like, no one likes the chewiness of chocolate.
I don't know.
That's not anyone's favorite part of chocolate.
I don't think they're all that bad, but... number 6, Necco wafers. A lot of people don't like Necco wafers, just chalk,
apparently.
I don't
mind them, but, okay. Like, yeah.
Number 5, Smarties, a smaller version of Necco wafers.
Terrible. You're eating chalk.
Number 4, wax cola bottles. These are a little bit of an older candy, so just very
just
waxy
awful.
And sugary. Just
it's
not
also
good.
It's like those. Do you ever eat the rubber Krabby Patties? Do you ever eat
no.
those? Yeah, they sold them like. And this tells you what quality of them I ate, but they sold them at like skating rinks and stuff.
Got it.
And they were basically just like gummy hamburgers, and that's what wax cola bottles remind me of
Got
to this
it.
Day.
Got it. Number 3, Circus Peanuts.
If you like them, you're a psychopath.
Number 2, Peanut Butter Kisses. These are kind of similar to Mary J's, except more of a peanut butter flavor. And then number 1, I absolutely hate them, candy corn.
I'll go to bat for candy corn.
All right. I will. All right.
My aunt's, who has hosted Thanksgiving since I was a kid, always had a bowl of candy corn. No one would eat them except for me.
Wow. Okay.
And she still to this day lays them out just for me, and I will eat the entire thing. I love candy corn.
Amazing. So, yeah, let's go through the best candy list now. Number 10, your classic Hershey bar, just chocolate. Love it. Number 9, Nerds. I'm a fan of some Nerds candy.
I'm not a fan of Nerds.
No? Okay.
They're a little too sugary for me. It's, I don't know. They're not terrible. They're not terrible, but not breaking my top 10. All right.
Fair. Number 8, Butterfingers. Fan of Butterfingers.
Great, but I hate how they stick to the roof of your mouth.
That is true. I'm a huge fan of number 7. I'm surprised it's so low,
too
but
low.
Kit Kats.
Too low.
Kit Kats at
too
7,
low.
I think it should be top
that's
5
top
at least.
Top 3 for me.
Oh, top
yeah,
3,
that's
yeah,
top
for
3
sure.
For me. Yeah.
I love me some Kit Kats. Number 6, you got Twix candy. I love me some Twix every so often.
I think 6 is fair.
Number 5, Sour Patch Kids. I love Sour
this
Patch
is my
Kids,
number one.
But not
this
every,
is my number
not
one.
All the time. I'm like I have to be in a certain mood for some fruity sour candy, so but I love Sour Patch Kids for
every
sure.
Every time I go to the movies, Sour Patch Kids and Sprite. That's the
nice.
Classic combo.
Nice combo.
Also, while we're speaking about candy, real quick, little movie hack for you guys. Popcorn, and you sprinkle in some Bunch of Crunches in there, it's amazing.
Nice. Okay. Number 4, we got
don't
Skittles.
Say we never did nothing for you.
Number 4, we got Skittles. Marshawn Lynch's
classic,
favorite.
Classic Skittles, yes. Oh, that's a good callback. Classic Skittles, yes. Sour Skittles, no.
Okay.
I love Sour Skittles, but those things will obliterate your taste buds for the next 4 days.
That is true. That is true. Number three, Snickers. Classic. I love me some Snickers.
I think Snickers are kind of overrated. I'd take Twix over Snickers.
Okay, that's fair.
Because they're kind of the same thing if you think about it.
Number two, M&Ms, but I think this is like wide-spanning all M&Ms, so it's like, I don't know. They weren't specific as far as what kind of M&Ms, so I like...
Well, that's just like, that's like ranking like all-time NFL teams, like the Steelers or the Cowboys, like they gotta be in there.
Yeah,
like, they're just historically good at that point. Like, they, it's just like they're in there by default.
And then number one, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. I love some Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
They won't be my number one, but they would probably still be my top three.
Yep.
So that's fair.
I agree with that. And now let's really quickly transition into top Halloween costumes. So I know obviously with COVID, Halloween is a very, you know, I don't know if it's going to be happening or not. Like most likely people are going to be social distancing, staying at home. I don't know if a lot of people will be participating, but this is a Google search sort of research based on top searches in the month of September of this year. So just top trending costumes of this year. You got some Cobra Kai from the Netflix show. So dressing up like, you know, your various...
Yeah, have you been watching that show, by the way?
No, no.
Yeah, I was never a big Karate Kid kid. I guess there's a better way of putting that.
But
I mean, I watched it as a kid, but never really, like, my dad, like, sat me down, made me watch it. He was like, isn't this show great? I was like, yeah, it's fine. And, like, everyone's freaking out about Cobra Kai now that's on Netflix. And I was like, eh, I've seen a couple episodes. It's good, not great.
Mandalorian, obviously, that's coming up
with
the new season.
Love it.
I love it. Tiger King, obviously, from earlier this year. Got some Tiger King costumes. Joe Exotic, Carol Baskin, what have you. Firefighters, obviously, you know, people on the front lines. Obviously, here in California, you got the, you know, wildfire. So, nice that you want to dress like a, you know, everyday hero sort of thing. Trolls from the movie, you know, take it or leave it. Whatever. Belle from Beauty and the Beast, so, you know, obviously for the ladies out there. And the Sanderson sisters from all of you Hocus Pocus fans.
I love that. That's
good.
A great,
I like
callback
it. Especially because
right
they're going to be coming out with another Hocus Pocus movie, so I think that's the sort of search that was happening there.
Can I say real quick, though, if you're dressing your kid up like the Tiger King, like, you need to check your priorities or rewatch a documentary, because you clearly missed the point.
So those are just top 10 trending costumes for kids specifically. You got your Supergirl, you got Glenda the Good Witch from Wizard of Oz, you got Robot, just generic Robot, you got a bat, which is interesting. I'm wondering if that's
so
like...
I need to ask you about this. When you said bat, I purposely did not let you know I was gonna ask this before I was watching your notes. Was that supposed to be Batman, or is
it
just
straight
a
bat? Straight up bat, that's what I saw. So maybe it was Batman,
kind of boring,
it was an interesting choice,
right,
especially with all the COVID stuff, and I don't know. You got Sally from Nightmare Before Christmas, a flamingo, apparently, a werewolf, and then you got Maui, one of the main characters from Moana,
Is that the one The Rock played?
Yes.
Okay. And then finally, I've never seen Moana, so.
And finally, we'll close it out with some baby costumes. You got your baby shark. You got your...
Real quick, throwing it back to our fantasy episode where we were discussing best fantasy names. DJ Shark. There is no way those two things are not related. The baby shark costume, the baby shark song.
That's true. I'm pretty sure that's what it's related to. Talked about already, Mandalorian, so you got your baby Yoda.
Absolutely. If I had a child, it would be baby Yoda.
Safe to say. Baby dinosaurs, Boss Baby from the movie Boss Baby, I guess.
The Oscar-winning Boss Baby, by the way.
Wow, okay, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it won Best Animated, if not last year, like 2 years ago.
Oh my lord. Okay.
I know, it was bad.
Baby Olaf from Frozen, I'm not sure if I said that one already.
Yeah, I've never seen Frozen.
Baby Lion, Baby Tiger, Baby Pumpkin, I've seen it numerous times. Those are some of the top trending costumes, so just a fun, you know, wrap up for our quick hits. I know it wasn't NFL related, but, you know, it's a fun segment of NFL quick hits. So that'll wrap up our, you know, special spooky Halloween themed episode. Depending on when you're listening to it, this could either be on Halloween, maybe it's after Halloween, but, you know, we're still sticking with the theme regardless, whatever it is. So it was a fun episode. I mean, we had some fun with lots of the segments, you know, all the candy that we're talking about and the trick-or-treat fantasy. I mean, Ted, it was a good time.
Oh, it was a great time. I mean, I doubt I'm going to get any trick-or-treaters, but yeah, God knows I'm going to be munching down some Reese's alone on my couch on the 31st, and I can't wait.
Yes, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups was the number one candy, according to candystore.org.
Well,
so Gotta get some, definitely, to honor that.
Sour Patch Kids. It's gonna be just very fattening. It's gonna
be great. Some Mary Janes, maybe. You know, we'll see if we can find some of those. But yeah, it was a good time. And hey, we got something exciting. We're gonna have our inaugural guest. I know we had a guest segment.
I cannot wait.
I know we had a guest segment with Chauncey, part of the LAFB crew. We did our fun football movie episode back in the off season, but we're actually going to do a guest interview. So we got Anthony DeFeo from the Behind the Steel Curtain pod. SB Nation blog, Steelers blog. He's one of their senior staff writers there, so we're going to be talking to him about everything Steelers, maybe some non-Steelers stuff. I mean, who knows, but we got some fun stuff planned for him, so make sure you're subscribing so you know that's going to be a separate episode from all of our usual episodes. So, yeah, make sure you're subscribed to This Eye Guys Football Forum, wherever you listen to podcasts, so you can see when that episode drops and you can listen in to us interview Anthony about all things Steelers. Yeah, as mentioned, just make sure you're subscribing. We want to hear from you guys on Twitter, definitely. You got the show podcast. You got the show handle, excuse me, This Eye Guys. You got my personal handle, UmberTheSide23. You got Tad's at TadTheSide94. So, I mean, yeah, interact with us definitely when this episode drops. I mean, please post your comments on the candy list, the costume list. Just what do you think about fantasy trick-or-treat ideas for fantasy players, just the trade deadline deals, just anything and everything. We want to hear from you guys for sure.
Absolutely, guys. Like I said, we're going to be pushing out a lot of polls in the next few days. So please, please check it out. We want to hear from you guys. Also, vote on the polls and tell us why in the comments. We will respond to you. I love to argue. I wish I could do it for a living, but I'm not smart enough to be a politician, or I'm maybe too smart about it, depending on who you ask. But despite that, please, like, we want to interact with you guys, so, you know, keep following us and everything. And as always, check out LAFB Network. I know I say this every episode, but I wouldn't do it if it wasn't true. Without LAFB Network, we would not exist. Like, they gave us this opportunity, and we could not be more thankful.
Exactly. Just shout out to Ryan Dyrou, the LAFB Network crew. Tad, you're posting some awesome Betty articles
So beating the spread.
If I remember correctly, you had a pretty good record this past week.
I went 6-0. If you listened to my advice this past week, you have won, like I did, at least $250. And yes, is a not so humble brag. So the article comes out every weekend. It's either Friday, Saturday, one of those days, but be sure to check it out. I love doing it. And we also do some great work just breaking down, like, why Justin Herbert should be Rookie of the Year over Burrow, stuff like that. It's a LA focused site, but it's not just LA, guys. We do all across the NFL.
And it's also not just football. So, I mean, there's Chauncey does his podcast on all things L.A. So, I mean, he does movie stuff, and he's going to talk about the Dodgers winning, and obviously the Lakers won. So, I mean, there's some content on there for you non-football fans as well. So, you know, make sure you check them out. They're really great people, really awesome people. Big salute to Ryan Dyrou and the crew out there. And just, yeah, once again, we thank you all for listening. And, yeah, make sure you hit that subscribe button whenever our new episodes drop. We want to hear from you.
And as always, stay safe, everyone. We'll